Hi, and welcome to the Canadian PodCount. My name's Andrew Campbell, and I am joined by my favorite Sarah, my favorite co-host, Sarah Sash.
And only.
And no favorite, not only favorite, Sarah.
Lovely.
We're in Newfoundland, Sarah, on location for the Dairy Farmers of Canada's annual general meeting.
That's right, Andrew, and today we're diving into a crucial topic that's shaping the future of farming and the environment, carbon markets and their impact on agriculture.
So we face this growing challenge of climate change. Carbon markets offers this unique opportunity for farmers to not only reduce the carbon footprint, but also try to find out if there's that new revenue stream in it.
Yeah, we'll explore how these markets work, the benefits they bring to farmers, and the practical steps to getting involved.
So let's get started on this journey towards a more sustainable and profitable agriculture landscape.
Our guest today is Marty Seymour, CEO of CarbonRx, a carbon credit organization and streaming corporation.
A farm kid from Saskatchewan, Marty has had an eclectic career, haven't you, Marty, of building business with some notable assignments that include international trade missions to Australia, Southeast Asia, and the U.S.
During his time at Farm Credit Canada, he was instrumental in the national movement to support public trust in Canadian agriculture, something Andrew and I both love, and was one of the founding architects of Canada's Agriculture Day, a national celebration of the Canadian food system.
He's had various roles in First Nations economic development, building one of the first Tim Horton restaurants on reserve, and currently works with First Nation leadership to advance local interests in carbon and land management strategies.
A diehard champion of Canadian agriculture, Marty sits on the University of Saskatchewan's Board of Governors and recently received recognition as one of Canada's top 50 in Canadian agriculture by the Canadian Western Agribition. Marty Seymour, welcome to the Canadian PodCount.
Great to be here, guys.
And it's great to see you again. I've seen you over lots of these points through your career. And to see you jumping into this space, I think, really does give proof that this is somewhere where the industry is going. You've proved over your career that you do go where the industry needs to go. You do lead it through those. So to see you take on this role and build this company, CarbonRx, I think gives credit, that really was an unintended pun, to really where this needs to go. So we've heard a lot about the carbon market, carbon credits. DFC's been pushing towards kind of the net zero in 2050. But one of the comments you made right off the bat was that it wasn't a debate about climate change. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I open all my talks with that. Foundationally is, when it comes to climate change, I think we didn't like the messenger, so we didn't listen to the message. And so it becomes really partisan. I don't like government XYZ, and so I'm not interested in this topic. And to me, carbon was really an opportunity to attract outside income into the farm gate. And so I don't have to talk about climate and all the pros and cons of climate change and severe weather and all the narrative that gets packed around it. I simply want to build a business that allows farmers to participate in carbon income as a new revenue source. It's just that black and white to me.
So we hear a lot on the farm about diversifying, and this certainly sounds like an opportunity in that regard. How does a carbon market work exactly?
Yeah, I would say what I've learned in the last couple of years in this space is there's two areas that people confuse the most that are kind of foundational knowledge points. The first one is there's two carbon markets, the compliance market and the voluntary market. The compliance market is the one that irritates people around taxation and punitive penalties. There's about 70 different carbon taxes around the world. This is not unique to Canada. Lots of countries have these, but it's effectively the government putting a cap on your emissions. If you emit more CO2 than their cap, you pay a tax. In the case of agriculture, most of the upside is in the voluntary carbon market. I call it the Kijiji of carbon. Both parties volunteer to participate. One group wants to buy these credits, the other group has them to sell. They agree on a price, they agree on the terms, they volunteer to participate.
So what's the difference there? Is one better than the other?
It's a really smart question. The foundational difference is the compliance systems managed by the government. Those credits tend to trade for more. In Canada, they're a reflection of the national carbon price at $80 a ton. A voluntary credit has a different barrier to entry. It usually has a lower bar to entry. I wouldn't say that they're substandard, just some of the rigor and some of the adjustments that a government would typically do on regulations are a little, I guess, easier in what I call a nature-based system. When you have plants and animals, there's so much uncertainty that it also means there's uncertainty in the actual numbers you get. And foundationally, the voluntary credits can trade anywhere from $5 to $40, whereas the government-backed credits trade at $80.
So then in terms of when you talk about those, is one better for the farmer? Like, are farmers, you know, better to play into that voluntary versus the compliance one? And then really, what's the main challenge of getting into whichever one is better for us?
Yeah, this is, you know, there's an infinite amount of nuances in terms of all of that, Andrew. And foundationally, is not all regions offer a compliance credit to farmers. So Alberta has a very developed market. Manitoba doesn't have one at all. Quebec has a nuanced market of that, and Ontario's kind of in the middle. And so depending on your jurisdiction, the government-backed or compliance credits may not be available to you. So the only default position is the voluntary credits. And what I love about the voluntary credits is I don't care what government's in power, and they're borderless. So when I jumped into this private sector after working for the federal crown, I got excited because my phone was ringing in Southeast Asia, it was ringing in the US and in Europe. I never had to care about the flavor of the government on this, nor did I have to wait on the government to slow me down. So the voluntary side is raw capitalism and commercialization, and it gives you access to international markets. And I love the idea we can attract that money back into ag from other jurisdictions, and we don't have to use Canadian dollars to fund it.
So how are farmers participating, or how could they participate in the carbon markets? Like, what are the steps in terms of, you were speaking to this in your presentation, but for the benefit of the listeners, could you explain to us what are the steps to getting involved to enter and benefit from a carbon market?
Yeah, foundationally, in order to do carbon, you have to establish a baseline. So what is your carbon footprint today? And so we typically look at practices and, you know, if you take, I'll use a farm, like a dryland farm, the most row cropping, et cetera, because it's a little easier than explaining the complexities of cows complemented with grain. In a grain situation, I look at the crop yield, I look at fuel use, I look at fertilizer application, and then I'm always looking for a zero till or a minimal till practice behavior. That's very common language in this space. Think of it like a ledger. You're adding and subtracting footprint based on a practice. So if I reduce my fuel, in theory, I have a lower carbon footprint. If I increase my nitrogen, I have a higher carbon footprint. And so we just add those. It's just math, plus, minus, to come up with a net carbon reduction from the baseline. So what carbon markets want you to do is establish your baseline, what's that footprint, and then which practice change would you implement to reduce your footprint? That practice change is defined as a carbon credit, and we monetize that. In the case of a producing cow herd, the things that are become popular today are practices that could reduce methane emissions. And for the most part, what I see happening is the evolution of feed additives, different feed-enhancing products that allow less methane gas to be produced. That's where dairy has the lowest hanging fruit in order to improve its carbon footprint. But that's also fairly emergent. Some of those technologies are a year old or 2 years old. And so we're in the early days of doing carbon really on scale across Canadian dairy.
And in terms of, you know, where Canadians are at, you know, you talk about a voluntary market. Clearly Canadians care. And you talked about, you know, kind of the ESG requirements, you know, of corporations, that they're getting involved and spending money in a voluntary program, basically to make it look like they do care, or they actually do, whichever that is. You know, I think it's one of those that, how does that play for agriculture then, if we do get into the space and connect that with the public trust piece?
Yeah, I think, you know, we opened this conversation about, it's not a debate about climate change. For me, it's actually a conversation about access to finance. So carbon, albeit is an environmental play to reduce our footprint and sort of do well by our neighbor, by our operations. And for me in agriculture, it's really an efficiency challenge. How can we be more efficient? The real driver behind it is access to financing. And so as big banks, pension funds are financing publicly traded companies, they all have to have a climate target. And that usually shows up as I will be net zero by 2030, 2040, 2050. And along the way, they can access cheaper money. And so for me, the driver behind this entire thing wasn't about the government. It wasn't about, you know, somebody wanting to buy an offset on an airline trip. This was about big banks incentivizing practices. And so I think we're going to see the emergence of a reduction in loan. So if I could save 25 basis points on a loan, and I got borrow $1 or $2 million, and at the same time I'm improving the efficiency of my operation, those two things would seem foolish to me. We don't volunteer to participate in that. And so regardless of change in government, you're going to see the banks drive carbon measurements and reporting into everyone's balance sheet, because it's already doing that in big blue chip companies in New York and Toronto stock exchanges that have to report their environmental footprints. And they're going to look to buy products, goods, and services from people that have low footprint. And where they can't, they're going to buy carbon credits.
Well, this is such an interesting space, and there's lots more to talk about here. We'll take a short break at this time, and we'll be back in a few with Marty Seymour, CEO of CarbonRx.
Meet a Canadian dairy farmer. Planting one tree, then hundreds more, to naturally purify the air. Preserving wildflowers for pollinators, and nurturing wetlands for healthier soil, so wildlife can prosper.
Biodiversity is in our nature.
Working towards a sustainable future. That's Dairy Farming Forward.
We're in! We're back with Marty Seymour, CEO of CarbonRx, as we explore just where the carbon market is going, you know, for agriculture, but obviously for dairy farmers, Marty. In terms of, you mentioned, you know, that carbon value, particularly in the voluntary space, is between $5 and $40. What determines a value?
Yeah, the value is a lot on its source. And so the most premium carbon credits come from places where you remove CO2 from the atmosphere. So the only place that I am, you know, there's two foundational places, but the one that I see the most is in growing plants. The photosynthesis is an act of removing CO2 and parking it in the roots in the plant matter. So companies aspire to buy those first. When they can't buy those, they look to buy credits from solar, wind. So effectively saying we're going to change our energy source from, say, an oil and gas source to some sort of renewable. But the value of the credits is often related to how much it costs to get them. So there's a driver in terms of if the credit was to come from a technology, say a direct air capture is all the rage today. That's basically a big filter, a bunch of fans that pull CO2 out of the air, pump it in the ground, or they put it in your Coca-Cola, wherever they do with the CO2. Agriculture's angle here, though, is to use plants and try to capture the most value for those credits just by doing what we want to do, grow stuff.
So then I guess the question really that a lot of dairy farmers are asking, and I have heard of dairy farmers already hearing from companies about looking to purchase those carbon credits, whether they be from feed additives or whatever it happens to be in terms of some of the contracts. But I guess the question is, like, how far away, or how does a farmer go about then extracting that $5 to $40 value for things that they're doing or want to do?
Yeah, it's a process. And so I think a lot of people are just learning what's the steps. And so it always starts with some sort of a contract with the carbon project developer. So that would be, you know, a group like myself that shows up, that can do the math and the accounting and follow through the steps. So you sign a contract with somebody, 20 years, some of them might be shorter term, but most carbon is designed 20, 30, 40 year promises that we're going to manage our farm in a particular way. Then the data is gathered and applied to a specific protocol. And the protocol is kind of like a recipe at a feed mill, or it's like your silage mix, you know, your TMR. There's a certain set of steps and a certain way we mix things up to measure and quantify the carbon. And then at the bottom of that, an auditor reviews the work, kind of like an accounting audit. You know, we need somebody else to look over it, so it's not just me and Farmer XYZ making some numbers up. There's actually third-party validation. And then a registry is the group that issues the credits. And they're just basically, think of it as a big repository of serial numbers that has a standard. They said you have to test soil to 30 centimeters deep, and if you're gonna count methane, it has to be calculated at 28 times the CO2 pollution equivalent. And so a set of guidelines that they use. And then at the back of that is issued the carbon credit. Now, some people get tripped up because they think they could take that credit and go sell it themselves. I'd admit that I probably believed that was possible for a farmer to self-market the credits as well. But I've come to realize that if a farm generates 10,000 credits and a big buyer, I often use a Disney Corp or an Amazon or a Microsoft, they need hundreds of thousands of credits. So you end up in a situation where you need to pool those credits to meet the needs. So most of the companies that help you develop your carbon help you sell your carbon at the same time, and simply by aggregating farms.
And what's the risk of that? Like if people are knocking on doors right now of farms saying, do you have carbon credits for sale? You know, and a farmer gets asked that, what are the risks for them? Should this be something they jump into with both feet because it is exciting, or is it something to pause and think longer term about?
Yeah, you know, and I'm a good, bad person to ask about that, actually, because obviously I moved early in this space. I'm at my job on carbon, so I'm an early mover in this space. And so if I look at that, what's your risk? Is that you've sold your carbon at $15 a ton and the market goes to 30. I look at it like right now, entering the carbon space is easier than it's going to be in 2, 3, 5, and 10 years. Because the expectation of the consumer or the buyer is that you continually get better. And so they're gonna say, well, 10 years from now, every dairy farm is operating with that level of precision, that level of efficiency. You have to do better than that. So I think there's a trade-off between moving early and taking advantage of a lower barrier to entry, and moving too early, whereby you leave money on the table. I tell people you can participate in carbon and change your mind in 2 or 3 years. Like, if as long as you follow through on those promises you made that the carbon you've sequestered is permanently there, then you're fine.
So then I think in terms of, you know, as farmers do, you know, whether they do jump in, whether they do in a couple of years look at it, whatever that happens to be, and we're looking to be net zero, and we're looking to do a whole lot of things that really are about telling our story, our sustainable story, that is, we want to do good and we are doing good in producing a high quality product for consumers. How do we then go out and make sure that they know that that is the case, that we are doing the right things and that consumers can feel good about purchasing milk for us, purchasing grain from a dryland farmer in Saskatchewan, all of those things across the industry?
Well, your sector's rather unique, as you're a marketing machine as far as the ability to brand and tell a story, and you've got the trust of Canadian consumers in general. The dairy farmer is a well-respected, trusted person. I think you've got an opportunity here to partner with the processors and the people that retail the milk to make statements and or comments to say this is a low carbon milk. Challenge for you as an industry though is, unless everyone does it, you can't necessarily make those statements. And so you have some warts and some hair on how you're gonna bring that commercialization. But you're further along than most ag groups because of your ability to mobilize groups. And you could start interprovincially or in a region. Fraser Valley, you have a consolidated milk pool that you actually have the ability to tell a story around. And, you know, I'll say it all the time, is that in the public trust war, we were late as an industry. Agriculture showed up 10 years after the public decided how food was going to be raised, fought back and said, but we are good stewards of the land. We are good. You trust our food. I don't want that to be the same for carbon. I don't want us to wake up one day and say that someone else set the weather, pun intended, on how carbon gets managed on our farms. That's our risk. That's the risk of doing nothing. You could buy and sell your credits and leave a little bit of money on the table, but the real business risk is that someone else tells you how to do it.
Well, and we've seen it in Europe.
We see it everywhere, industrialized societies where maybe we have more food than we really need, it's not scarce, and other people start to dictate how food gets raised. And, you know, look at it in its simplest form as, carbon has a potential to offer a premium on our respective goods and services. And, you know, I'll bet you there's some cheeses out there that already have a low carbon statement attached to them from raw branding. How they've measured and proved it, I don't know. I'll trust that it's validated and supported. But we can do that in the entire supply chain. It's not hard in dairy.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, Marty, just in terms of just how new it is, how we as farmers, you know, we can kind of add this hat to our arsenal in terms of jobs we have around the farm is to be that sustainability expert. So thanks for both walking us through here at the meeting in Newfoundland, as well as for our listeners. Thanks, Marty.
Yeah, thanks for being curious, Andrew. I think it's the foundational step to start this journey.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of the Canadian Podcast. We hope you found the discussion with Marty on carbon markets and agriculture both insightful and inspiring. Did you, Sarah?
Of course. A big thank you to our guest, Marty Seymour, for sharing his expertise with us. His insights are pretty amazing.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure having Marty on the show, and I think I can say fairly that we all learned a lot.
Sure did. Huge shout out again to our production team, Carl Bellanger and Bruce Sargent, and of course to our sponsor, Dairy Farmers of Canada.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Be sure to share, subscribe, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform.
We'll catch you next time.